and welcome back to 10 out of 10 with Watch Game with Lauren and Russ.
Hello.
So we went to see Nosferatu last week, which we'll speak on in like 5 minutes. And with all, obviously, the hubbub about all the vampire movies resurfacing and everybody's right into the like gothic vampire romance thing going on the now. And we've already done Bram Stoker's Dracula. So we figured we'd go in the total opposite direction and do 1996's From Dusk Till Dawn. So do you want to speak a bit about Nosferatu? Like,
it was a movie that was shot well and looked great, but I didn't like really feel anything about the movie. It was a very cold movie.
Yeah, it's a bastard because you and me were buzzing for it. Like, even in the Bram Stoker's Dracula episode, you and me were like, oh, wonder how Bill Skarsgård's going to hold up against like the rest of them and stuff. I liked it. I thought it was shot beautifully. I thought 90% of the cast was great. Do you know what I mean? I did enjoy it, but I'm with you on that it felt cold. I did feel like it was missing something. I don't know what it was missing, but it felt like it was missing a bit of soul, a bit of heart. Like, for it to be, obviously, like, at the end of the day, Dracula is a kind of fucked up love story, and Nosferatu is the ripoff of that. And I kind of wanted there to be a bit more, like, I don't know, pull or connection or something.
Yeah,
you know?
I just felt there should have been something more. I don't know what he could have done, but I didn't get the same. Like, I left that and I felt, didn't feel any better or worse for seeing it.
You were annoyed.
Yeah, I was expecting so much more for it and I didn't get it. So.
Totally, totally. I did like it, but do you know that way? I kind of want to watch it again to make sure that I liked it. Do you know what I mean?
Because
I feel like I spent the whole time just being like, this is great, this is great, this is great. And then when we left and you were like, nah, I was like, oh, did I go in there with like rose-tinted glasses, you know?
Yeah, so no, I get you.
I do want to watch it again just to make sure that I liked it. But then I have a feeling that I'll watch it again and be like, Rose was right, this was shit.
We'll wait until it comes out home, release, and we'll get a swatch.
Aye, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Anyway, back to Dusk Till Dawn. Ross, here's your spish.
All right, so it was released in January of 1996. Directed by Robert Rodriguez, written by Quentin Tarantino, starring Harvey Keitel, George Clooney, Quentin Tarantino, Juliet Lewis, Cheech Marin, Fred Williamson, Salma Hayek, Danny Trejo, and Tom Savini.
What a cast.
Oh, stacked cast. Like, a lot of they guys.
I mean, it's the regular like faces in the Rodriguez verse, you know? Like,
oh, aye. Like, it's just, I think they've appeared in Mesa, like both of their movies, to 100%. Be honest, aye. A budget of $19 million and a box office of $59 million.
Yeah. So, general overview of the film. Two bank robbers take their hostages to the wrong bar.
Aye. I mean, there's no much else you can say, is there?
Right, totally. So, why do you love this movie?
I mean, this is a movie that keeps you on your toes.
Totally.
Is it a genre-bending, genre-defying, like, movie? For how crazy this story gets, it's kind of like coherent and like entertaining throughout, which is just a wild ride.
Totally.
It's phenomenal.
Like you say, like, obviously, like, for as wild as this movie gets, it's still kind of grounded in reality, if you know what I mean. Like, obviously, like, when the switch up happens, it's crazy, but everything still kind of feels like, of course this would happen in this kind of world. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, like, it feels like this is something that's not out of place in this story.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I hope this comes off in the right way, but, like, this is a really nasty movie, but in the best way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get you.
Obviously, through a 2024 lens, this movie hasn't aged beautifully, but I do feel like it came out in 1996. Give it its due of its time period, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And obviously, please keep in mind who wrote it, Tarantino, and who directed it, Rodriguez, you know?
Oh,
what I mean?
Aye.
Like, the two of them are obviously really known for their kind of sleazy, nasty, kind of grim films, but they work and they're so good. And this is a movie that, like, I always look forward, like, see if somebody's like, I've never seen From Dusk Till Dawn, I'm like, sit the fuck down. And it's like, obviously, the movie is spoiled, like, oh, and never mind anything else in the fucking title of the movie, but it's one of those ones that if nobody's seen it or even heard of it, I'm like, I will not say a word. Like, just sit down and watch this film. You know, like, spoilers ahead, guys, if you've never seen it. So just dive into thoughts and opinions. Like, I think Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez are such good collaborators because they both have really distinctive styles. And when it's brought together, it just oozes cool works so well. Like, it's sleazy but badass. The script always comes out with these, like, really tough one-liners.
Yeah.
Like, Tarantino's, like, really quick scripts work really well with Rodriguez's style. Everything is kind of out there, but has the real kind of grindhouse feeling of, like, this could actually happen in a skeezy bar anywhere you like kind of thing. And I know obviously grindhouse is like the genre that Robert Rodriguez does the most, and they both of them fucking made a movie called Grindhouse, you know. Yeah. So
I think they both love the B movies, the grindhouse movies, the like cheesy like drive-in theater movies
absolutely.
And all that.
Absolutely.
Like,
I mean, look at the Machete franchise. Yeah,
like
I mean?
You can tell they've bonded over that big time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think like what really works is like now, obviously Tarantino movies kind of you can put them in any setting, but it's mostly like a group of guys in like one to two locations. I mean, obviously now he's got Hunters of Money, we're all over the shop, do you know what I mean? And it's just a lot of talking and a lot of quick wit. Whereas like Rodriguez movies, especially at the very start, were all like they feel really dry, do you know what I mean? Because they're always in like deserts and stuff. Like think of Desperado, do you know what I mean? Like the abandoned town and they're all like really cool. The music's always class. Like it's that kind of like beautiful Spanish guitar mixed in with a kind of like swamp rock ZZ Top kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah,
so good and so class.
I mean, you say that then it's Spy Kids.
Yeah, Spy Kids and Sin City.
Yeah, like, such a bizarre like choice.
Yeah, and like especially of all people like Robert Rodriguez making the Spy Kids franchise that
yeah,
was
what,
like
what the fuck's that 100% all about?
And like Danny Trejo's cutting about in a kids movie, do you know what I mean? We loved Spy Kids. Spy Kids was great.
Oh, Spy Kids growing up was phenomenal.
100%.
It looked terrible now.
Oh,
but,
absolutely.
But it was great when it'd been away, obviously.
Those big
it was.
Thumb villains and Alan Cumming just showing it. Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. I think this film, sorry, back to Dust Up Done. This film hooks you like immediately because it kind of brings you in halfway through the Gecko Brothers story, where obviously like you do spend the first kind of 20 minutes, even up to about half an hour, trying to figure out who they are, why they're there, why they're in the store kind of thing. And obviously as it goes on, you find out that So George Clooney, Seth Gecko, was broken out of jail by his brother Richie, Quentin Tarantino, and they basically go on a spree of like he gets him out of jail, they rob a bank, they take a hostage, they kill loads of cops / Rangers, like Texas Rangers,
and I think that they're going to Mexico to give the stuff they've stolen.
Yeah, give
the
them money.
A bank case they done, wasn't it? Yeah.
And like they take a bank teller hostage and then they go into this like liquor store, and immediately within the liquor store you get the sense of their relationship where George Clooney's like, everybody be cool, you be cool. And then you've got Tarantino being like, he fucking is mouthing to that cop, help us, and it's like, I never said help us. Like the first 20 minutes of this movie is fucking insane.
Oh yeah, the opening scene's just class. I mean, it just starts with the sheriff or the Texas Ranger going out of the shop just shooting the shit.
Yep.
With the clerk.
Mm-hmm.
Totally nothing in it, but it's typical Tarantino dialogue, just like kind of natural, like quick, witty.
Talks about the bank robbery and he's like, oh, if I'm lucky, they'll be driving my way. So hopefully I'll get them and then I can go home and get pished kind of thing.
Just like a mundane thing for like just like a mundane scene. Then it quickly pans round to like them got the two girls hostage and it basically goes to shit for there.
100%. And like really sets these guys up as like awful people from
the get-go.
Like, from the minute this starts, these guys have no fucking redeeming qualities apart from the fact that George Clooney loves his brother. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, quickly, like this quickly turns violent.
Yeah. Oh, like within 20 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
not
God,
even.
George
Clooney's character is, he's just kind of like a bank robber general criminal kind of guy, but he's kind of cool about it. Whereas Tarantino is instantly just fucking creepy. Like,
oh yeah.
There's a later on in the film, there's like a news anchor, and it's kind of following it like it's like a game show kind of thing, and it tells you that Quentin Tarantino is a bank robber and sex offender, whereas George Clooney's just a bank robber. And it starts tallying up all the people they've killed, like civilians, rangers, cops, all this kind of stuff. And it's, I mean, I've never been to America, so I couldn't tell you what American TV's like, but this really does seem the way of the clips that you see of what American news is like, of this kind of extremist, almost like tallying everything up, getting everyone involved kind of thing, as if it's like a drama where it's like, no, these are real awful people. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's more, I mean, obviously I've never been to America, but it's to get people to watch.
Yeah, of course.
That
yeah.
See, like when you seen that in the movie, it was kind of like, I was kind of thinking like a weird Running Man type situation.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, watch it on this channel. I mean, it's not as explicit as that in this, but I don't know. I just got a weird like vibe of like, that's something that like they would do in that. Oh, you only see people. We only tell the truth about how many people get killed on this.
Yep.
I'm like, it's pretty fucked up.
It kind of reminded me, and obviously we weren't around, well, not around, we just weren't aware, of the OJ trial, of now the really famous clips of the police chasing OJ down the motorway. It kind of reminded me of that, because like, obviously like the kind of news reports you see of that, they're like, oh my God, and here comes the car, and blah, 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 and there's like people on the top with like their flags and stuff. It kind of reminded me of that, of like, it doesn't feel real because it's just drama. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think as well, obviously, so after they wreck the store, they go into a motel with the hostage bank teller. George Clooney goes, I'll be back in 5 minutes. I'm going to go get us some food. And the hostage is left with Quentin Tarantino. And like, instantly, you just feel uneasy. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh, like, and he's got that really creepy, quiet voice of like, oh, but we go watch cartoons on the bed. And it's like, don't go, don't fucking go.
Yeah.
And then it does a lot of tell, don't show, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So when George Clooney comes back and opens the door, it's that kind of Fight Club, you see it through the kind of cigarette burns.
It kind of cuts in. Yeah. Like just little sharp cuts.
Yep. And it's just George Clooney being like, Richie, what the fuck is wrong with you? As it's like the kind of cigarette burns of blood on a phone, blood on a wall, da-da-da. And then you can, there is a part where you see the bedroom from way back. Like so you still see blood and stuff, but it really is left up to your imagination of just how fucking grisly it is in there. And that is just like, and George Clooney shouting at Quentin Tarantino being like, do you think this is what I am? Do you think this is what I do? And it's like, fuck, like instantly you're like, Tarantino's unhinged as shit. Do you know what I mean? Oh, like, yeah, this is awful.
You see Clooney's disgust.
Absolutely.
Like, well, death. I said disgust and his brother.
Yep. Instantly.
You know that if he didn't break him out of prison, they do the heist. Does it? He probably wouldn't work with his brother.
No, absolutely not.
Like, he's too much of a wild card. Like, absolutely. You just don't know. It's like so like unpredictable and chaotic.
Totally. And I think you get a good vibe from Seth of being like the kind of quick talker, quick thinker, because every situation they're in, it's Quentin Tarantino that takes it up a notch, you know?
Yeah.
We hear later on that Quentin Tarantino's character, Richie, is the one who shot a lot of the cops. And you hear as well, like, it's obviously Tarantino's fault that they fucking blew up the liquor store and all this kind of thing. So George Clooney gives this really, really intense performance because you know he needs to be on his toes to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, he mentions it and is that we're trying to keep quiet here. So why have we had to blow up a liquor store?
Yeah, so much for a low profile.
Like, I get the feeling, like, George Clooney's character in us is that he plans everything.
Yep.
Whereas Richie just, it shows you in some scenes that he is, like, sick in the head.
100%.
So you can kind of see it in us that, right, Richie Seth will plan all this stuff, but Richie will just come and fuck it up anyway.
Yeah, totally. I think this is one of my, and I don't know if this is, like, a hot take or not, I think this is one of my favourite George Clooney performances ever. Like, I wish George Clooney had played more bad guys in his time.
Oh, aye.
Because See, like, when you watch George Clooney in ER, Ocean's 11, blah, 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 literally just pick a George Clooney movie, do you know what I mean? I think he obviously, like, good-looking man, really charming, this really kind of arrogant charm, but not in an off-putting way.
Oh, yeah, I get you.
And obviously that works towards being, like, the hero and the protagonist of the film. But I think it also works when he's the bad guy because, like, he is really charming as he's telling everybody, like, sit the fuck down. Yeah. Like, what is it when he's, like, talking to the hostage and he's like, if you ask any questions, Mr. 45 answers. If you run, I've got six little friends.
Yeah, he's got six friends that can deal with it. Totally.
But the way he says it, he's got this kind of smirk on his face and it's like, there's just this charm to him that I'm like, see, if you'd have went down more villain routes, like, you would have been so good as, like, a pure mega villain, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially for this film. I mean, obviously, we were too young, but, like, he'd have been, what, the main, not even the main guy in ER, but he's kind of the one that came out of ER and went, like, I mean, he's fucking A-list of the A-list.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But this was his first, like, leading movie role, like, his big one anyway.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't harm that it's in a Robert Rodriguez directed, Quentin Tarantino written, but
yep.
I don't know if at the time people would have expected this from him.
No, well, okay, I'm going to give out a bit of useless information just now. The reason George Clooney was cast is because he was doing ER at the same time, and Tarantino thought it would be really funny to have this, like, charming, sexy doctor who, like, the public sees saving people all the time to turning him into this, like, cold-hearted killer.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of thing. And I was like, that's such a Tarantino thing to, like, cast someone with, do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's, like or not, this is before he's leading one in Batman.
Yep.
So it's like, this would have been a bit of a left-field choice, I imagine, at totally. The time, be like, why the fuck have they got Clooney in this?
Yeah.
And imagine it now, like, if you get Clooney in a movie now, that's a big movie.
Yeah,
but back
totally.
Then, you're like, oh, I'm not sure. That's crazy.
Yeah, like, obviously, like, you know what you're going to get with George Clooney now, but I think now he's older, he kind of relies on, what was that one he did with Brad Pitt, Wolves? And it was just shite. But it's a lot of, like, it's a lot of talking, like, George Clooney does now. It's a lot of, like, I'm going to sit on a boat and go down fucking Venice and, like, la la la.
I think he just makes movies where it's going to be, can I get a cracking holiday out of this?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if you're at that point in your career at any time, you fucking would.
I'd do it any day of the week.
What's this film? Is it a lot of shite? Cool. Where are we filming? Paris, no danger. I'm on my way.
Yeah,
I'm
pretty sure I've got an apartment now.
Yeah, totally. So we get introduced to Harvey Keitel, whose character is a pastor who's lost his faith after his wife died in a car accident. And his two kids, Juliette Lewis and Scott Hugh, I think is the actor's name.
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah.
And they're all on a road trip, just heading about. I think they're heading down. It never says why they're heading down Mexico way, but they're on a road trip. And they end up staying at the same motel that the Gecko brothers stay at and are then taken hostage with their RV and told to take the geckos to the Mexican border.
Yeah, get them out of Mexico.
Yep. This then leads into one of my favourite fucking lines of the movie of, where are you taking us? Mexico. What's in Mexico? Mexicans. Like, there's so many excellent, like, one-liners in this movie. Do you know what I mean?
Aye. But this is where it kind of shifts from, I mean, what would the start of the movie be? Because it's just like a crime film.
Yeah, crime heist film.
Yeah, then turns into a kidnapping movie for the next, half an hour?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, because they have to go across the border, and then when they get across the border, they're like, right, okay, you're going to drive us to this bar, we're going to wait there overnight, we're going to be safe, yous can fuck off home, everything's been fine, do you know what I mean? And for being, like, a hostage, Harvey Keitel is so fucking calm, do you know what I mean? And I don't know, like he's, like, if I was kidnapped, I'd be a fucking riot, do you know what I mean? But, like, he's, like, hitting George Clooney back as, like, good as he's getting it kind of thing. And, like, when they get over the Mexican border, George Clooney's like, I love this. You don't fuck with me. I don't fuck with you. Relationship that we've got going on. And I'm like, yeah, 100%. Like,
yeah, I mean, George Clooney doesn't really have the chance to do anything with that because he needs to look after his brother.
Yeah. While this is going on, right? So basically, while George Clooney and Harvey Keitel are up the front, Tarantino's up the back giving Juliet Lewis some fucking side eyes and a half.
Oh, Jesus.
Imagining her saying really explicit things to him and all this. And it's like, and then I think there's the part where George Clooney kind of clocks the way he's looking at Juliet Lewis. Yeah. And is like, put in your bit. And he puts in his braces. And they're just like, I ain't bother, cool.
Yeah, because obviously he knows is that if he does anything, then...
then we're all fucked.
Yeah, him. But is that the, he's just not going to take him with the border. So
100%.
He kind of has to play it cheesy with the dad in that as well. Because he knows that with if it happens to the kids, then the dad's not going to give a shit.
Absolutely. Yeah. They get across the Mexican border and they drive to a dive bar called the Titty Twister. Now, from the outside, this bar, any bar called the Titty Twister, this bar is like super iconic in this film. There's like huge neon, like fucking tits. There's like, it's basically like a skeezy trucker biker bar with like naked women everywhere. And this is where the movie cranks up another fucking level, right? Where honestly, like all we're doing right so far is this whole bit is like the roller coaster waiting to get to the top, right? So we've cranked up another level. We have a monologue that would never be fucking made now. There's the Cheech Marin
knocking out the park.
Oh my God, right? Like the pussy monologue is something that you would never be able to put in a movie these days. You've then got Sex Machine and his crotch gun. And his crotch gun is shaped exactly like what you would think it is. And then Salma Hayek and the snake, quite possibly, there's a reason that the Salma Hayek dance is one of the more iconic parts of this movie.
Oh, fuck it.
Like, that woman is, like, ungodly stunning, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but was it Santanico Pandemonium?
That's it. And, like, this is all before you get to the fucking dramatic twist, and I say dramatic, you don't get a chance to find it dramatic because it happens so fucking fast, that the bar is in fact not a bar. It is a hovel for ancient vampires who basically feed on bikers and truckers. And like Salma Hayek, for all she's a stone cold stunner, turns into the ugliest fucking vampire you've ever seen in your life. And like, this is an, and then the, we're off. Do you know what I mean? We're at the top of the roller coaster and we've dropped. Do you know what I mean? Like this movie, instantly, like even from just like swamp rock guitar to like satanic chanting soundtracks, it's fucking insane.
Yeah, I mean, even thinking from the hostages, right? So that's obviously there to drive the plot.
Yep.
So like you kind of get to know the characters. You see, because they have a conversation, Seth and Harvey Keitel, and it's like, oh, I lost my wife. I'm sort of losing my faith. It's like, I'm just trying to get on, like, get on with my life.
Yeah.
So you do that, as you said, get the Titty Twister, absolute fucking chaos. Like, everything in it is just mental. But it's clever how they've done that, so it's like, you feel something for these people.
Yeah.
Because I think if they were just to get there in that time, you wouldn't really care.
No.
What's going on, which I think is, like, it's very good writing.
But it's Tarantino, isn't it?
Yeah, it was like, it's just, guy's just a genius.
Oh, totally. Like, the flip from it going from, like, a heist movie to, like, a fucking vampire movie, it's really jarring, and it happens so fucking fast that, like, you don't get a chance to catch your breath until the characters do, you know what I mean? Like, you are just automatically flung into all these, like, stunning naked women and big tough men turning into the ugliest fucking vampires you've ever seen in your life. And, like, it doesn't let up until the characters are standing there being like, what the fuck have we just, like, what's going on? Like, how many things have we just killed? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's one of those things is that the first time you're seeing it, you're like, fuck sake, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But then once you know what's going to happen, you're just waiting for it, is it? And it never gets, like, boring. Like, even the introduction to the, like, even, like, Danny Trejo, who plays Razor Charlie in it, now, it's just this, you have to be a truck driver to get in and all that. They have their wee moment with them. And obviously, as I said, Sex Machine has, but then you get Fred Williamson.
The Vietnam guy. I can't remember his character's name, but yeah, like the Vietnam vet.
He's just sitting there like all menacing and tough. And is it? It's just like the introduction titles is probably one of the most memorable like locations in film.
Totally. And then instantly you've got arms and legs flying across the room. The band stops playing instruments and starts playing body parts. Yeah. Like, green blood is being spurted everywhere. Like, and these vampires don't just get staked. They fucking dissolve. Like, they explode. Yeah. Like, it's a lot. Do you know what I mean? And what I also really appreciate is that these vampires are actually, like, monstrous and ugly and, like, really, like, they've got that kind of bat face and they look super fucked up, do you know what I mean? Which is the departure from the kind of stunning, sexy, I'm a vampire, one hang about with me. Like, these are the vampires that you'd be like, no. Like, if they put these vampires in Twilight, fucking whole different story, do you know what I mean?
It's quite cool, though, how Richie, Death, and Harvey Keitel and his kids, it's kind of went for they're very standoffish with each other. It's like, oh shit, we need to team up now. That it turns out like a team-up film for them.
Yep. And then Salma Hayek bites Quentin Tarantino after Quentin Tarantino has written this into his script. Now, everyone knows who knows Tarantino movies. Tarantino likes the feet.
Funny you should say that, actually. I have written a section here for that.
Okay, let me describe the scene to people who, in case they've never seen it, you fire in. So basically, Salma Hayek comes in, snakes round her neck and snake hips for days, doing this really sexy dance, and then pours whiskey down her leg and puts her foot in Tarantino's mouth, then pours whiskey down her leg so that Tarantino is then drinking the whiskey from her foot. Now, everyone knows Tarantino loves a foot. He still denies having a foot fetish. Tarantino, my man.
Like, oh, no, don't, like, just stop lying at this stage, my
100%.
Man. 100%. Right, so I've compiled...
I love the research you do for this pod, Russ.
Other, like, movies where he happens to have feet going in it, okay? Yeah. But the man does have a foot fetish, so it's all right.
Right.
Right, so in Pulp Fiction, Uma Thurman's character, Mia Wallace, has seen barefoot in a few scenes in it, including the dance scene with John Travolta at the Jack Rabbit Slims, I believe it's called.
C'est la vie, c'est the old folks, yeah.
Right. The second one, Kill Bill. Now, that's probably the most famous one.
Wiggle your damn toe. Yes. Yep.
Just a her trotters out on show, ready to go, right? third one, Jackie Brown, Bridget Fonda's character Melanie, is often shown barefoot. Don't remember Jackie Brown. I don't even know if I've seen it, to be honest.
I think we, do you know, Jackie Brown's one of those ones we've started loads of times and then there's always been like a reason to turn it off. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, we'll have started it too late and we're tired or like, do you know what I mean? So we will finish it at some point.
But apparently there's a bit where the camera just focuses on our feet. Is it? Cool, Tarantino. It happens in Death Proof as well. You see her hanging a wee tootsies out the car.
Yep.
And Glorious Bastards. Diane Kruger. I mean, notice how it's all like beautiful women he's doing it with.
Oh, aye.
Right, he's not got my toes at.
Ross, no one wants to see your toes.
That'd be a horror on itself. But they use her barefoot to examine her barefoot to confirm her identity. How you could do that barefoot, I don't know.
Yeah.
But probably this one's pretty shitty. But once upon a time in Hollywood, so you have Margot Robbie and Margaret Qualley. Now, you kind of say they're not attractive people.
Oh my God,
stunning. And they get their feet out as well.
Margaret Qualley's got her feet like right up against the window and all that and like hanging out.
But he does have a foot fetish, so I'm allowed to say all this. It's fine.
Nae bother.
Aye, it's just all joke.
Aye, Tarantino, you keep fighting those allegations, right? Aye. back to Dust Till Dawn, right? I think as well this movie wouldn't work if they did the whole, you know how Marky Mark and The Happening where it's like, what? No. Like, see if they stopped at any point and was like, this couldn't be happening. Like, know how in so many movies where there's like vampires or werewolves, you've always got someone just being like, no, werewolves don't exist. Vampires don't exist. Blah, blah, blah. Whereas in this one, instantly, like, George Clooney's like, I don't fucking believe in vampires, but this is clearly fucking vampires. So let's discuss every vampire movie we've ever seen to figure out how to fucking kill them.
Oh, everybody buys into it straight away. Like, the best part of it is the scene where it's like, right, everybody on board, they're vampires. And he goes, oh, fuck, I. Then Havoka tells her, I don't believe in vampires, but I'm pretty sure I've just seen fucking vampires.
Yeah. Yeah, and like when they're all arguing over how to kill them, and it's like, I'm sure Silver's got something to do with vampires. And it's like, well, does anyone have Silver? Then it doesn't fucking matter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're all just talking about like, oh, Peter Cushing's done this before, and like talking about like comics and films. And it, like, I don't think the movie would have worked if they weren't just instantly fucking on board. Do you know what I mean? They're instantly like, right, cool, you're a pastor. Go and bless the water and stuff. There's obviously the whole thing about Harvey Keitel as a pastor losing his faith, and what goes into another class fucking line reading where George Clooney's like, are you a mean motherfucking servant of God? And Harvey Keitel's like, I'm a mean servant of God. And it fucking, it cracks me up every time, man.
So we're now going to get into kind of the battle of the vampires?
Yeah. So basically, yeah, the whole crew manages to wipe out the first round of vampires, and then you start hearing fluttering, and George Clooney's like, well, it's fucking bats, and then round two starts.
Aye, but they kind of, this is where it's like, they have time to plan their attack. I mean, I say plan their attack, it's basically whatever the fuck they can find.
100%, like, and this also, as a viewer, is where you get to be like, what the fuck has just happened, do you know what I mean? See your man, the Vietnam vet, whose name we cannot remember, when he starts his rant of like, because they're kind of talking about all the vampires they've killed, and he's like, when I was in Nam and you were under about a million dead bodies, you realize that Sex Machine's been bit, and he's really freaking out about being bit. And then halfway through the speech, Sex Machine's really creepy fingers come over the shoulder and like, oh, there we go, do you know what I mean? And then is it not, they like punt Sex Machine's head out the door, and that's what causes the hole that all the bats came flying.
Yeah, that's a bit of a weird bit, because Fred Williamson, who's the Vietnam vet, I can't remember his name in the movie, but it's kind of like he kind of knows Kung Fu, but
yeah.
I think that's homage to him, because he was big in blaxploitation cinema.
Yeah, he was like one of the big huge ones.
He was part of the big. A big group of the leading male actors, and I think Ezra is more like Kung Fu films than that. I'm not sure, but I know Tarantino, like, he loves all that type of cinema, like all like the alternative, but if you get what I mean.
Yep, totally.
So I imagine he's put him just as an homage to it. You've had a fucking brilliant career. Like,
I'm on being our film. Yeah.
Thank you for inspiring me to make all this weird shit.
Yeah, and obviously Harvey Keitel is in most of, if not all of, Tarantino's earlier movies.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
I genuinely think the reason he's not in them now is just because he doesn't work anymore, do you know what I mean? But obviously, they all start trying to find weapons from, like, whatever's lying about on the floor. Harvey Keitel gets a shotgun, puts a bit of wood through it, and makes it, like, a cross gun.
Yeah.
And, like, starts saying scriptures while, like, shooting vampires.
Oh, it's fucking class. Honestly, so man, it's unreal how good that is.
Like, 40 out of 10 cinema, do you know what I mean?
Oh, fuck, aye.
So then, obviously, the bar gets full of all the fresh bats who are somehow more fucking grotesque than the ones we've just seen.
Yeah.
And Harvey Keitel gets bitten, and they manage to get into a cupboard. Now, this is normally the point in any kind of monster movie where everyone fucking melts down, and it's like, oh my God, he's been bit. Oh my God. Instantly, Harvey Keitel's like, you've got me for an hour, so we're going to fucking kill as many of these vampires as we can. And he starts, like, they start going through the cupboards. Well, I say cupboards, it's like a storeroom kind of thing. And to see what's lying about. And it's obviously, like, all the kind of loot from all the truckers that have been murdered over the years.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
And they start making weapons out of the maddest fucking shit. So, like, Harvey Keitel's, like, scratching crosses into bullets. They fill up water guns with holy water. They fill up condoms with holy water.
Yeah, it's like the holy water, like water blends.
Yeah. And like, there's like crossbows. George Clooney gets himself this kind of steak chainsaw thing.
Yeah.
And like, it really is, like, it's one of those great like suit up moments, you know?
Oh, I do like in this as they don't, as you say, they don't fuck about. It's no. Like, I've been bitten, right, we've not got time to.
100%.
Like, in most vampire movies, and it's like, you would, the one of the main guys would get bitten, it would need to be a fucking 15-minute dialogue.
And it, when everyone's like, oh no, not you, not you. Like, nah, Harvey Keitel's like, I've got an hour. Fucking yeah. Let's go. Do you know what I mean?
Is it, they give him, he's like, he's 5 minutes to, right, get out of the way. To, right, we need to fucking do this.
Yeah. And he's like, as soon as I turn, one of you needs to fucking kill me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's kind of his banter, is it? Well, if you don't kill me, I'm going to kill myself right yeah. now. And I was like, fuck, take me. Like,
yeah.
That's your kids.
Totally, totally, totally. So then the kind of round two of Battle Royale begins, and it's them like throwing these like holy water condoms at vampires, and the vampires are just like melting. Like their eyeballs are exploding. There's green blood again flying everywhere. And then obviously we get to the point where Harvey Keitel turns. And turns into like a pure rat-looking vampire. He looks absolutely nuts.
Yeah, he's
nuts.
The oddest one out of the lot of them.
And he, ain't he? Like, I mean, all of them are grotesque, but he's the one that looks like a proper like creature, if you know what I mean. Whereas like some of the other ones have got like the bat noses, but they all just kind of look like really grim monsters.
Yeah.
Whereas he's really fucking bizarre. He's got the weird bat ears and shit. And like his son clocks that he's a vampire, so throws this holy water condom at his head, and half his head is like disintegrating. There's like brains oozing down the side of his face. And then obviously they take out Harvey Keitel, but then the vampires eat his son, so Juliette Lewis has to sort that out as well. And it's just fucking, it's just insane. Like, and it does that. And now I love it when other vampire movies do this, but this one does it really well, where when the sun starts to come up and the sun's coming through the bullet holes in the ceiling,
yeah.
and it kind of makes that like laser effect of like where the vampires can go, where they can't go, that
yeah,
kind
yeah,
of thing.
Aye. Well, aye, that's kind of like the ending of the film, because that, for all this is, that is a very, it feels a very quick movie, but for an hour 42.
Oh, totally. Yeah, basically, so by dawn, Carlos and the gang show up. They kick open the door, which means the sun hits the mirror ball, which then explodes the yeah. rest of the remaining vampires. And they go out, and Carlos is like, are they psychos? And it's like, do they look like psychos? They were fucking vampires. And then basically, George Clooney gives Juliette Lewis money and is like, go. And he says the great line of, I know I'm a bastard, but I'm not a fucking bastard.
Fucking bastard, yeah.
And they go off to El Rey. Juliette Lewis goes, and the camera pans back, and you see that the bar is built on like some kind of Aztec temple,
yeah, it
or
looks like it anyway, yeah.
burial ground. And I mean, nothing good ever fucking happens when you build shit on that. And there's all the, like the trucks and bikes that they've kind of flung into the pit all the years of them eating, like all the people. So fucking class. And like you say, for this movie being an hour 40, like, it's breakneck pace, do you know what I mean? Like, you're not bored at any point.
Oh, no, it doesn't give you the chance to be bored.
And in the nicest way possible, it doesn't really give you time to think either, do you know what I mean?
It's the heist bits in that, it's, like, the beginning is all action, because it basically needs to get you to the
to
main
the bar.
Part, aye.
Yeah.
So, aye, it's just, like, even watching it, like, yesterday, I was like, God, this movie felt a lot longer. But is it this time I'm like, wow, this is rapid.
Totally. And it is that kind of beautiful thing of being like three movies in one. Do you know
what
I mean?
Oh, that's perfect. So you see all the stuff about the vampires that we brought up, the Aztec temples and that. I just want to say something about the, like, I wonder how the TV shows and that have done this.
Uh-huh.
If like, I think they've also had to go more into the lore of this movie, which I don't really think should have been done.
We started the TV show when it first came
out. Years ago, yeah.
We watched maybe half of the first season and you just weren't vibing with
it. Pish.
And I was the same as well, like, because I know there's Dusk Till Dawn and then there's From Dusk Till Dawn 2 and 3 that we didn't know existed until yesterday.
No idea, no.
We had no fucking clue. So, like, I would disregard the TV show and 2 and 3, just watch this movie. But yeah, like, I don't even remember what we watched, to be honest. Like, I know we watched like half of the first season, but it was boring. And it's like,
there was no point in it.
Yeah. They do that a lot though, where they take like short movies, try and make it into a TV show. And it's like, how do you flesh out an hour and a half movie and keep people interested?
Yeah, it's like, this is one of those ones where we don't need an explanation as to why they're there.
And I think that's another reason of why this film works, is because you have to spend a lot of this movie figuring shit out for yourself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You have to figure out what's going on with the Gecko brothers. Then it's like, they don't give you an explanation of why there's vampires until the very end. And if you don't pick up that it's an Aztec temple or an ancient burial ground, that's also okay.
Yeah, it like, doesn't matter, no.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, you can take as much or as little from this movie as you want, but it's not one of those movies that spoon feeds you. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
aye.
You're as much on your toes as the cast is. Uh-huh. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm with you. So, I've been thinking about something here. And
oh, no, don't think. That's a terrible idea.
I know. I'm going to get in trouble for it. So, obviously, this is like a genre-bending movie.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to think of other ones that kind of not all necessarily horror.
Uh-huh.
But is it how... I don't know why they don't make more of these.
Yeah.
Because it's just... It's so class.
I think, though, this is the kind of thing of when you get it right, you get it right, but you could so easily fumble bag. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But I wonder why more studios, because there's got to be writers out there that could do it.
100%. I think recently, and also, it's also a vampire movie, but recently, I think Annabelle tried it. Like, I think Annabelle started off as a kidnap movie, like, taken, then instantly you find out that she's a vampire and they're all there as part of her like playthings. Yeah. And I think Abigail, no, I'm not saying From Dusk Till Dawn isn't camp, right? But From Dusk Till Dawn is kind of grounded in reality as much as a vampire movie can be. Whereas I think Abigail went the completely opposite way and went more gothic horror, campy,
yeah.
over the top. But I do think Abigail probably would have been helped with a bit of the From Dusk Till Dawn treatment, you know?
I think the key to it is you can't take it serious.
No, you can't.
Like,
you've either got to, like, make it as dramatic as possible and make it as out there as possible, or do what this film does, where everyone's in it, do you know what I mean? Like, everyone's there, and they're like, cool, we get the fucking memo, and they are...
Yeah, we know what we need to do here.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So, I've got three examples here.
Okay.
One of them I'm not sure about. It's just like when I was looking it up, this was always on our list.
Okay.
But I'd like to hear your opinion on it. So the first one is a movie we've already done, The Cabin in the Woods.
Aye, stunning. Like stunning.
That, yeah, that subverts your, I mean, it's a horror comedy, but it's kind of going like behind the tropes of the horror like genre.
Absolutely. And Cabin in the Woods covers everything.
Yeah.
Like, in broad strokes, it covers every kind of horror movie in one. And also, it does that kind of, like, it's a government conspiracy movie as well as a horror
film.
Yeah,
and, uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
So that and Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The story of that itself is just, I mean, it stays comedy, but then you have, I mean, it changes in the sense of that it's, it turns out a blown-out action film.
Yeah, yeah, it stops being a movie about actors trying to make a film and just becomes them, like, actually,
yeah.
Like, it does become a war film, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So it's not exactly a genre bending, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like, it's part of the story.
Yeah, but it does that thing of, like, it switches halfway through, do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Where it goes from them being like, oh, we're actors in the jungle, to like, oh, fuck, we actually, like, they stop acting, if you know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, how are we actually going to do this? Yeah, yeah. Tropic Thunder are so fucking funny.
Yeah. Like, we watched it when we were in London, and I forgot how good that movie
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it for donks, and then it was on in London, and I was like, class, like, yeah. It's so funny.
So good. And the last one, which I think's a bit strange, is Psycho.
Yeah, okay, no, that's absolutely fair, because, yeah, Psycho goes, because she's, Psycho's a heist movie at the start, isn't it? Like, she's, God, I've not seen Psycho for years, but she robs a store.
She steals from her boss.
Right, okay.
So it starts as like an embezzling movie. Like, she's on the run for embezzling. I can't remember how much it is, but it does that. Then it turns into a
horror movie.
A horror/thriller.
Yeah.
So like when I seen it pop up on list, I was like, I don't know. But I don't think so. But I haven't seen it in that long. I don't know how quickly it changes.
No, from what I remember, again, I've not seen Psycho for years. And I think we've spoken about this before, actually, where we kind of feel like we were done an injustice by the time we got to see Psycho, because by the time we got to see Psycho, it was in Looney Tunes, it was in Scooby-Doo and all this kind of thing. So by the time you get the review, we were like, all right, cool. But I remember my dad telling me, like, at the time, I mean, obviously my dad was fucking too young for Psycho, but, like, the first time he watched it, is like how much of a shock it was to the audiences that was killed off like within 20 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because she was a big name.
Big Janet Leigh, right? couldn't remember. Obviously she was like a huge name, and I think as well, obviously Psycho was kind of helped from the time where there wasn't, not that there wasn't trailers, but like you could get away with not saying a lot. Like you had Janet Leigh's name and it looked like it was going to be like a heist movie or whatever, and it like a thriller kind of thing, and then it's became the one of the most famous like iconic thriller slashers like
The shower scene alone's just
100%.
Like there's a reason it's been like ripped off
totally
every opportunity.
Totally. I wouldn't have a fly. No, I'll give you Psycho. Like I would never have because I was feared you were going to ask me to like name one off the top of my head, and I was like, fuck. But like now you've said Psycho, I totally see it. Like yeah, definitely. Yeah,
they tend to stay in like the horror comedy.
Yes.
Things, I mean, the one that the pop talking is at what a shout is Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
So good. Yeah, that is
a movie that shouldn't work, but oh fuck me, it does.
So funny. Yes. So funny. Yeah. I think that's two kind of genres though, horror and comedy, where you've got room to play, if you know what I mean.
Oh, like, yeah.
You can do it as straight down the line as you want, or you can go as out the box as you want. And I think if you're going to do a genre flip movie, you've got space. But again, it is the kind of thing where if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. Do you know what I mean? If your script is not air fucking tight and your actors / characters are not fully committed to the bit, it's no happening. Do you know what I mean?
It won't work, no.
It's no happening. I just fucking love this movie, man. It's so good.
Oh, it's just fucking phenomenal.
We'll dive into Let's Go. What Let's Go moments have you got?
Fuck.
I know.
There's too many.
I know. We were saying this last night. Like, every 5 minutes, it will be like a line reading or like cool fucking musical kick in. Honestly, cannot recommend the soundtrack to this movie enough. Like, so fucking good.
Oh, it's stunning. But do you have one? Because I generally don't. There's too many.
Really? See, I just had like line readings. Like, see at the very start when he's like, everybody be cool. You be cool. Do you remember back in the day, there was like a dance song? We were in fucking primary school, and I remember it was on like side two of one of the Nows, and there was like a dance song, and it was like, everybody be cool. You be cool. It was so bad. But I remember like when I actually got to watch From Dusk Till Dawn, and he said that, my dad, I was like, oh my God, it's the song. And my dad was like, shut the fuck up. Like, that I've got everybody be cool, you be cool, or just the I'm a mean servant of God. But like, the second Sam Hayek comes out on the stage, that's a fucking Let's Go moment. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, if I had to put a D once he gets bitten and knocked away from over the bar, the preacher.
Yes.
Like, as soon as he pops up with a shotgun.
Yeah,
like,
the cross gun.
The cross shotgun. I'm like, you know what? That's fucking class.
Yeah, 100%. Why? Also, do you know what I've just realised? Sorry, before we go any further. We have not discussed Tarantino as a vampire. Now, his makeup as a vampire is like a caricature drawing of his face. Like, they've somehow made his forehead 10 times bigger, his chin 40 times more pronounced.
Yeah, yeah.
it's like those mad caricature drawings you get at the beach on holiday, but like in prosthetics. It's so fucking funny. So fucking funny. Anyway, sorry. What's your favourite scene?
Just say that the Let's Go is my favourite scene as well.
Yeah. See, I've got my favourite scene is, see, basically from when they get to the titty twister up to the twist, because it's like they're all just badass gangs, do you know what I mean?
And
you know something's happening, but you don't know what. And then as soon as Salma Hayek's like, you will be my dog, I'm like, I ain't bother. So I'll dive into useless information. So body count 122. Quentin Tarantino was originally set to write and direct this film, but he took a step back when he decided to take on the role of Richard Gecko. This was also Tarantino's first paid writing gig, like writing alone.
Oh, right, okay.
Earning him $1,500.
Fair enough.
Do you know what I mean? I was like, I was looking that up because I was like, surely fucking not. No, genuinely, like everything before, he'd like donated scripts, or obviously he'd written and directed.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
was his first.
Yeah, the first one he's
Here's my script. Yeah, yeah, totally. The food that Seth brings back to the motel is from Big Kahuna Burger, which also featured very fucking prominently in Pulp Fiction. Quentin Tarantino has the name trademarked, so you're always... I actually didn't know this until last night, and it's another reason of why I'm looking forward to watching more Tarantino movies again. Of every Tarantino movie has some form of Big Kahuna Burger in it, whether they drive past the shop, whether somebody's got a bag of it. So I think this will be good, like, going back and watching Tarantino movies, we can see if we can spot, like, Big Kahunas. Cheech Marin appears 3 times in the film. Once is the border control guard, who is also so fucking skeezy to Juliette Lewis. Once as the bar MC / owner / pussy monologue guy. And last as Carlos, who comes to collect them. And all 3 of his characters are skeezy arseholes, man. Like, Cheech Marin is so unlikable in this film. Green blood was used for the vampires to get the movie past censors. Apparently, if they'd used as much blood as they'd wanted to, there's no way it would even got, like, an R rating or something. American movie, like, age certifications pure confuse me, man, because there's about 6 different ones over there, whereas we've just got, like, PG, 15.
Yeah, those are just simple. This is the age you need to be.
100%, 100%. During the bar brawl scenes, Tom Savini was scolded for actually punching many of the actors, including George Clooney. Apparently, he nearly broke George Clooney's nose during filming. Sex Machine's crotch gun can also be seen in one of the guitar cases in Desperado, which gives us an excuse to watch Desperado again.
I know, fair enough.
This is my favourite. The noises that the vampire dog makes. I forgot that there was a vampire dog.
Why did that escape me?
I always thought that was a fucking rat. Like, see the amount of times I've watched this? I just thought it was a giant fucking rat. Turns out it was a vampire dog. The noises the vampire dog makes is actually sound bites from Robert Rodrigo's 2-year-old son, who was learning to talk at the time. So it's all just him being like, so it's like him trying to talk Spanish and not knowing. I was like, that's fucking incredible.
No, fair enough. That's class.
Because I looked this up before we watched the movie. And then obviously when it got to the vampire rat dog thing, I was like, if my wame was making noises like that, it would be getting punted to a priest.
Oh, you'd put it down, wouldn't you? Fuck that.
Rammstein's music video Engel is a homage to this film.
Fair enough. I need to watch that, find it.
Robert Rodriguez conned Salma Hayek into doing the snake scene by telling her that Madonna was waiting in the wings to take her role. Salma Hayek had a terrible phobia of snakes and worked with therapists for 2 months to overcome her fear.
I mean, that's a bit extreme. But do you know what I mean? For the scene alone, fair dues, good honor.
100%, 100%. So here's the bit that you like. Antonio Banderas, Steve Buscemi, Michael Madsen, Tim Roth, Jeff Goldblum, and James Woods were all originally up for the role of Seth Gecko. Robert De Niro, Christopher Walken, and John Travolta straight up turned down the role.
Travolta turning it down?
Yeah, he turned it down because he'd already done Pulp Fiction. Or I think he was about to do Pulp Fiction when this was getting made.
Oh, right, okay. You know,
but I was like,
fair enough. But
if Tarantino comes calling not once but twice, you say yes. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Why would you say not to him?
100%. I could imagine Antonio Banderas in this, but then they'd just done Desperado, so I understand why he's been like, Rodriguez, my man, he's a break.
Yeah.
Buscemi couldn't see it. Couldn't see it at all.
Nope. It could be Tarantino.
I could see him. I could see him as Richie. Couldn't see him as Seth.
No, he's too a weird looking dude.
Too small.
Not trying to be horrible, but I think the leader man, like, Seth needs to be like a confident, like, tall, like, good looking guy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Michael Madsen, I could maybe see.
You see him as a vampire on the bar, but not as.
Oh, really? See, but this is early Madsen. This is like Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction Madsen before he went fucking mental.
Nah.
I know he wasn't in Pulp Fiction. What
I could. Nah, I don't see it. I could see him maybe as a guy he's meeting up with.
Yeah, fair.
He doesn't have to be Mexican, but
yeah, Cheech Marin didn't need to play 3 characters, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I'm happy with the casting. Anyway, Buscemi for Tarantino. I could see that, but other than that, I'm quite happy with who's in it.
100%. Couldn't imagine Jeff Goldblum and James Woods went on to make that movie, Vampires, so I'm happy with that, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have any A's?
I've got two.
Okay, cool, because I don't have any. Like, I just didn't. Do you know that way? I've just seen this movie so many times. I'm like, there is no flaw. Nothing. There's no flaw. Well, you're about to fucking tell me a flaw, but.
No, the one I've got that really is annoying, but this is for most vampire movies.
Okay.
Is the timings of people changing.
Totally get what you mean, because, like, at the first fight, when they're biting the customers, some of them are turning, like, fucking instantly. Then Harvey Keitel gets an hour. There's, like, the one that Juliette Lewis is supposed to kill that takes fucking ages to turn into a vampire. Totally get what you mean.
That and this one I've got, but seeing how I've wrote it, like, I'm reading it after writing it down yesterday, I realise it's a lot of shite.
Okay.
And is that vampires, they have a funny way of keeping quiet, like by owning a bar like that.
I've
come to realise is that they need to attract people to them, so
I get myself
wrong on that one.
No, not at all though, because I do get what you mean, but I know they need to attract certain people, and obviously that bar is in the middle of fucking nowhere, so, like, you're only really going to be going to that bar if you are a trucker or a biker or something. Like, you're not
going there if you've got people that are going to miss you.
Absolutely.
It makes sense.
But, like, I do get what you mean in, like, other vampire movies. Do you know what I mean? See, even in, like, Blade, where it's, like, the blood rave at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Like, as much as that's really cool and stuff, like, why? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, keep a low profile.
Yeah, totally. But, like, with this one, obviously there's the bit where they're driving in and you can literally see there is nothing else around the Titty Twister for miles, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is one of those random fucking bars that, I suppose, if you've been driving your truck all day, you're like, oh, I'm tired, oh, look, tits, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's lit up like a Christmas tree, so it could be the only place there.
100%. But no, I don't think you're talking shite. I do think that is a good A, but more for other vampire movies rather than this one.
Yeah, that's the only two I've got.
I have none, because in my eyes, this movie has no flaws.
Well, fair enough.
Best kill, worst kill?
My best one is Big Keitel killing Fred Williamson as a vampire.
Yes.
So sticking the shotgun in his stomach, then shooting all the other vampires, then he just melts.
100%.
And my worst one is Richie killing Gloria, the bank teller, off screen. And it's not, the killing's gruesome and it's a horrible scene, but you don't see it, so.
But I'm happy you don't.
No, I'm glad you don't, but. As a kill, if you don't see it, then.
Yeah, fair. Best kill, I had Harvey Keitel's face melting off, like when the brains are oozing out and all that. Worst kill, so mine's probably just like the vampire dog or something. Or even there's a bit where, see when the four of them, so you've got your Vietnam guy, Sex Machine, Harvey Keitel, and George Clooney are facing up against the four vampire women.
Yeah.
And there's that one really fucking ugly one at the end with, like, her guts hanging out. Pour one out, because the rest of them are, like, stunners. They're still, like, sexy vampires, where she's like, that's me going out with my pals. Who's your worst guy whose hairline just eating?
Oh, it's got to be Richie. Richie Gecko, surely.
Yeah.
He's just a creepy sleazeball. Like,
he's so fucking creepy. And they do this beautiful thing. Well, it's not beautiful. It adds to how creepy fucking Richie Gecko is. Of basically, like, any time Richie's looking at a woman, there's that kind of, is it reverb? Like, that kind of vibration sound of, like, when and you know there's something fucking going on behind those beady eyes.
There's, like, a frequency that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just to unsettle you. Like, it's quite smartly done.
And it fucking works. Because even when he's not doing anything, even when he's just staring, it's like you hear the kind of frequency vibration noise, and then the camera will pan to, like, her knees or, like, stuff like that.
Her feet.
But, like, as much as you only really see Richie, and I say you see him, you don't really see him do anything, it's the unsettling, and it's the. I do think the bit in the hotel room with the hostage, as grim as it is, it's done really well.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you don't see how gruesome it is.
Uh-huh.
And even when you see the scene, you don't really. Do you know what I mean? You see it from, like, super far away. And you only kind of hear what Juliette Lewis says to him in his head. Like, she never actually says any of this.
No,
it's him imagining
it.
Who's in a different movie?
Don't know.
Yeah.
Because this is, like, three different movies all in one.
Totally.
So how can you be in a different movie?
Totally. I had Tarantino, but not in a bad way, right? Hear me out, right? His performance is very now that Evan Peters, Jeffrey Dahmer TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very that kind of vibe. Like I could see him if he wasn't in a vampire movie being in like a fucking Netflix true crime drama. But even when his performance is like super freaky and off-putting, it is balanced out by George Clooney being super cool all this kind of thing. So I'm not meaning it as in like it's a bad different movie, but I'm just saying I could totally see him in like Monsters.
I get you.
I think Tarantino could have been a creepy serial killer if he wasn't a movie director. He's just got one of those faces. Have you got an I'm out?
No. How can you be?
No, I know. It's like three different movies in one, yeah. And it's over by the time it starts.
Doesn't give you a chance, of course.
Nah, totally. And we've been adding in the kind of 1 out of 10 movie of the week. But Ross is going to told you Nosferatu was his 1 out of 10. I do not agree, but, you know, it depends whose side of this you take. Anyway, guys, this has been our From Dusk Till Dawn episode. Follow us on everything, and we'll see you again next week. Bye!
Bye!
Everybody be cool. You be cool.